Bum, bum, bum. Greetings, pals.
Hey, pals.
Welcome to the podcast, Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name's Tom.
And this is the podcast where we talk about movies. Love it. Oh, my gosh.
What did you just
do? You love it?
You just
that much?
Knead the microphone into your own mouth.
And deep throated the microphone.
I will tell the listener, this is take two of this intro. So let's see how this goes.
Breaking that fourth wall, don't you, Tom?
Hold on. Yeah. Shut up. Don't ruin the illusion, man.
Yeah, my bad.
Love it or hate it, we debate it, is what I was trying to say before I smash my face in.
Smash Mouth. Wait, that's a great name for a...
Let's talk about Smash Mouth.
Yeah.
No, we're talking about June Part 2.
Hey. I'm trying to talk about films today, but Tom decided to sit there and just smash a pizza. The room stinks.
I do have pizza.
So it's June Part 2, 2024.
not dealing with this at all. Denis Villeneuve.
Wrong.
Say it again, Frank.
We're both wrong.
Oh, no, shit.
You're right. It's Denis Villeneuve.
It's Deli. It's Deli meat.
It's the Deli meat.
Denis Deli.
Denis Villeneuve.
Yep.
I'd say this is going about as well as the first intro, wouldn't you guys?
So this is like based on a book and stuff, and it's like a big space epic, and Timothy Chalamet is here.
Yeah.
So
this is all great stuff, Frank.
Do you want the synopsis of Part 2 or just...
No, please.
Please go ahead.
Okay. We're doing it now?
No, like right now.
Paul Atreides unites with Shani and the Fremen while on a warpath of revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the known universe, he endeavors to prevent a terrible future only he can foresee.
Frank.
That was great.
That was pretty good. And what with the sound design you do for the show and the way you edit and you read the stuff, you're doing too much for the show, I think. You're really putting in the effort.
I don't think he's doing enough,
that's
to be fair. But
maybe he's doing too little. Maybe he's born too Dune? Too furious?
So shout your name if you like this movie.
Tom Marcus.
I noticed that Frank isn't saying anything, and that's probably because he watched the movie and really didn't enjoy it. Has a hot take. He's like taken it in, ingested it. He's got some opinion he's going to give us on the film that he's seen.
He's definitely seen it.
Well, yeah, he's watched it. That's the whole point of the podcast. You come in after you've seen a movie and you talk about
So here's the thing. I've definitely done a lot of research.
The movie you watched?
Yeah, well...
You watched it, you were like, I need to research this and get into this rich film that I watched.
But we were like, yeah, Frank, we're watching this film. And he's like, yeah, for sure. And
Okay, in my defense...
Oh, no.
In my defense, I watched part one. I have a baby at home.
Mm.
And anyone who has a baby knows how annoying those things are. You can't watch any movies.
You heard it here first.
I apologize, folks. If you say that, I felt bad.
Did he do it or did he don't? And he doomed not.
Thomas.
I'm losing the Dune puns.
I'm a slap you.
You suck at this. Yeah. I have seen it.
He has.
I got it in.
No, he has.
I watched it.
Did you really?
I downloaded it illegally. Don't. Hey. Hey.
Comfort. Boys, get in there. Oh, they were under the table. Those bulldogs dressed as police officers.
Yeah, hungry. I watched it. I finished it 2 hours ago.
And... So you should have.
Yeah.
I don't believe you. But if you truly have, that's a good misdirect because you told me leading into this episode, have I seen it? That was my entire day. Like, all right, well, Frank just hasn't watched this one.
For a 3 hour, just shy.
2 hour 40.
2 hour 40 epic saga that this is.
Kind of breezes by.
If he hadn't seen it. He was going to be in for a bad time.
This was going to be a bad time.
No, like you talk about, I know he surfs a worm. You know that before you even watch it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's most of it. Shit, he's got us.
I got you there. Oh, Sandy walking. Oh, they be walking in the sand.
Oh. Okay, no. So for a bit of context, this was a film originally released in the, I'm going to say, 80 what?
84. 84. Was the first film.
Oh, the David Lynch one.
The David Lynch
which
one.
Which everyone now,
we should
hated.
Say it's based on a book by Frank Herbert from the 60s.
I have not heard that.
Mm. Frank. No.
I don't know if we can keep doing this. To be frank, I think it's going to...
Now, if you're familiar with Lynch's work, audience, it's bizarre. It's kind of... Well, I don't really get it. I'm not going to pretend I get it half the time when it comes to Lynch, but...
I get it.
Oh, God, you are so groundbreaking.
You know what, let me tell you. And it's really bizarre what he does.
Oh, yeah.
But he, like, he leans into it.
He does. You know? He really commits to the weird.
They call it Lynchisms. He just keeps doing them.
All good takes.
Frank. Now, the lead guy in this was the same guy used in Twin Peaks.
It's Kyle MacLachlan.
Kyle MacLachlan.
And Sting played Fade Rather.
Yeah.
Which will...
Now, I'm not that familiar with this original.
I haven't seen it.
Patrick Stewart
Of always held on to it as a, yeah, before I die. Like, I'll watch that, I'm sure. But it's not...
Maybe we do it one night.
Yeah. Okay.
Frank, have you seen the original film?
God, no.
He hasn't seen this one. Okay. He hasn't seen the one we're talking about today.
I've read the books. I've seen part three.
Tom, have you read the books?
No.
Okay.
I know people who have.
They're too long.
Moving forward from this conversation, we don't have a lot of background.
I don't think you need it. There's not a lot of lore and, you know, it's, you know,
my
understanding, it's a simple story, right?
My understanding is that this new vision, this new
From Denis Villeneuve.
Are we going to say it's a part three? There's a part three, right?
I feel like we're...
It has to be.
Yes, but I feel like we're jumping ahead from, and
we are.
We don't want to get too into the fact that we're talking about the sequel to a very highly celebrated film, and arguably this is not just the movie event of the year right now. This could be the biggest movie of the... Like, this could end up being the Barbie of this year, or the Barbenheimer, right?
You just is it movie of the year? And then it said it's the Barbie of the year.
No, I mean, as in, like, it's the movie event right now, but then by the end of the year, people will just be like, and that was it in February. It was kind of like...
No, because Deadpool 3 is coming out.
Fuck, yeah, I forgot about how good that movie is.
Oh, yeah. Wolverine in a yellow suit. So come on.
Excited for that.
So, hey, Thomas, stop being so arrogant. We rate these films
too
on
good
the podcast.
For Deadpool.
You do think you're too good for Deadpool. You're on my Deadpool.
Fucking right, I am.
I'm going to win some money. We rate films out of 11 on this podcast.
We do.
What? Tom, you always have a reason. That's what I love about you.
Yeah, I've always
have a reason for the 11. Because normally it's like 10.
Of all the things you love about Tom, that's one of
it's
the big
that
ones.
It's ready 11. With the 11s. Yeah. Oh, boy. If I think about all the times I've been ready with an 11, it really takes me back.
Do it. Just get to it.
My 11 for this is it's the number of times that Timothée Chalamet denies being the Messiah and Javier Bardem goes, "That's just what the Messiah would do." That's my favorite running bit of the movie every time.
It's so memeable at the moment too.
Yes.
Like it's like Timothée Chalamet farts.
That's how the
just
Messiah
as it was written. Like it's very funny.
Timothée Chalamet sells chocolate.
Yeah.
He's like, "That's how the Messiah would
do it." Was written. He would pretend to be Willy Wonka.
I'm making chocolate, of course. Just like the Messiah.
It's pure imagination.
Yeah,
it reminded me of my church days.
It's kind of funny
after
a while,
right?
People
just are dying to believe.
Yeah.
Yes, and this movie has a lot to say about that. But really quickly, this is part two of Dune that came out in 2021, Denis Villeneuve, and was the biggest post-pandemic movie at the time, I think maybe short of like the original Godzilla and Kong. I say this in advance, Frank. Frank doesn't want me to go meta with these eps and go behind the scenes, but Frank was the one who wanted to do Doom Part 1 and Doom Part 2, and he was upset that we weren't going to do it, and now that I'm talking about Doom Part 1 at all, he's just like, no, don't!
Aren't you doing your 11? Isn't this your lead into the 11? Why do we rate films out of 11?
Marcus,
Doon your 11?
Have I Dooned my 11?
You haven't Dooned it!
Oh, he Dooned it.
I did it.
When?
Yeah, he did it.
What did you say?
He actually did it.
I actually did it, Frank. This is some egg on your face.
Yeah. I'm losing it.
That's the number of times that Javier Bardem says, just like the Messiah would.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was so
Jesus,
good.
Jesus, baby
my God.
Brain.
I know.
Should we cut that and keep going?
No. We want people to know how silly you are.
Dune Part 1 was date and day released on HBO Max streaming while it was at cinemas. Still made a lot of money. Decent amount, like 400 plus million.
By the way, bugs me so much.
Fucking terrible. And it was one of those things where people were like, cinema's done, the pandemic ruined it, no one's going to the movies ever again.
Yeah.
And it was very stupid, right? You know, obviously we've had some big movies since then. But, yeah, Barbenheimer, for instance.
Dune Part 2, for example.
Dune Part 2, which we are talking at the moment on Monday the 4th of March, which I just say because it's literally just been released in the last few days, Dune Part 2. It has already made $178 million international. That's $4 million more than Oppenheimer made on its opening weekend. This is going to be a big movie. This movie might crack a billion? I don't know. It might not.
And that's less than 10 billion?
Wait.
Hold on.
If it makes 11...
Hold on, Frank. Yes.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Just checking.
Go.
I'm so sorry about that, Francis.
So what do we rate this film? Give me a number.
Oh, we haven't said our ratings yet.
No, this has been chaotic, but
this
I kind of love
been
it.
real, like, this is the equivalent of a sand dance in podcast form. There's no real rhythm to it.
Frank's so bad.
You just got to feel it, you know? You just All right, I'll go first.
Go on.
I give this film a 10.
Oh! 10's not bad. 10's pretty good.
10's pretty high.
Yeah, but it's not 11,
is it? You're right.
That is the same score as my favourite film of all time. I'm going to jump in early.
Because this is what you gave Shrek 2. I remember.
Wait. You really think this is a 10?
I think this is a 10.
I think it's a 10.3.
Really?
Yeah.
I think this is a fabulous movie.
It's fine.
Go on.
Oh. It's a 6. What?
Okay, hold on.
Okay, because...
Frank!
You know 6. I have a phobia of sand and worms.
And Timothy good, Chalamet, apparently.
And good movies, yeah. You know I hate it when they do a good job.
Hold on.
Let me just quickly...
You go.
Maybe the reason I hate it is because every 30 minutes, my special version that I watched that wasn't in cinemas had a casino ad pop up and interrupt the film.
And you didn't see it in a cinema.
Yeah. Hey,
There's much to unpack here.
There's much
here.
To do about nothing. But what am I supposed to do about it? Okay, so it wasn't the perfect viewing experience. But you can't say that Oppenheimer was shit just because you didn't see it in IMAX.
I guess I agree, yes.
Yeah, so I guess you shut up.
Ooh, shit.
It's fine.
Fighting words.
I've never seen Frank less upset. Yeah. I think this is the most chill he's ever
I didn't
been.
See Oppenheimer in IMAX. I wish I did, but I didn't, and I still got the full experience.
Yeah.
Well, no, because you didn't get IMAX.
I walked out of this one more so than Oppenheimer, truly, and went, I'm really glad I saw this in cinema.
Yeah.
Okay, way to make me feel bad.
Sorry, no, but that's the truth.
And like, I saw it in IMAX. And I was just like, man, I can't wait to go to the casino after this.
Something. I can't wait to watch this on my iPhone.
Yeah, that's it.
I watched it on VLC on my Mac, on my 13-inch Mac screen, but floating on top of other windows. So it was maybe 4 inches.
Like, you couldn't have chosen a better film to watch in a worse format.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do? It was either that.
Doing better.
Or not.
I mean...
You guys put the pressure on me to watch it.
Comes to a movie podcast he's like partially pioneered and go like, oh, what, I'm meant to watch them now?
No, okay, for real. So let's put that aside. Let's shelve that. Surely you have more to contribute to this as a 6 as to why this flopped. Effectively flopped in your eyes compared to our 10s.
So I grew up watching Tremors. Don't know if you guys know Tremors, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing film. One of the best low-budget worm horrors that there ever existed because there's not many worm horrors.
Uh-huh.
And this is like a bad version of that. Mixed with Star Wars.
I mean, okay, yes. There is a lot of... comparisons
and how
to
do
Star
they all
Wars.
Sorry, how do they all jump on the worm and ride it?
Okay, look, if we're going to pick this apart,
no, but
yes,
seriously, the whole thing of Timothy
I will
Chalamet,
jump in early.
Go on.
How the fuck do they dismount
that's
the worms?
The scene they don't show, obviously, where they're just kind of like, and apparently they, especially when they've got a pregnant woman in like a little pod in the back, and they're like, lady, we're going to throw you at some stage. Like, you just got to be ready.
Yeah.
They don't show that. They also, one of my favorite things about the first movie, and they elongate it a little bit in this one, but every time someone starts sand walking, Denis Villeneuve shows them for about 4 seconds and goes, you get it, it's silly, and just cuts to another scene because he's like, I'm not going to show this for like 2 minutes at a time. It looks weird.
But this is the sci-fi fantasy genre. You just have to buy into it. Especially sci-fi, you just kind of go, oh, lasers just work, laser guns, you know, whatever. Like, you justify anything in sci-fi.
Lasers are
like,
real.
This is the universe we are selling you, and you buy it. And if you don't buy it, stop watching.
Respectfully, I didn't. I downloaded
no?
it.
No, okay.
No, you did not buy it.
And we've talked about this in previous pods. If you don't buy it...
I am messing with you. I feel like I bought into the concept. I just didn't... Again, it might be a hype problem. I feel like I just don't like... Sorry, I don't like Timothy Chalamet. I don't get his appeal.
Then this was going to be tough.
Yeah, a bit of a tough sell.
But I thought Austin Butler. I missed the A on it. Austin Butler was great.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Florence Pugh.
I think.
Zendaya, obviously. Christopher Walken.
It's a powerhouse cast. I think almost everyone in this.
Rebecca Ferguson, also very good.
Sensational.
Very true.
Yeah, I think Josh everyone Brolin. In here, like, it's very hard to pick someone and go, you were the weak link.
Timothy Chalamet.
I think everyone played their weakest part well. I think Timothy played the equivalent of what is Hayden Christensen in in Star Wars.
Like Anakin.
That just that
sense
Anakin,
that he
just
hates
that,
sand because
like,
it's coarse and
just
it gets
a bit
everywhere.
Of like there's just that bit of that angsty stuff going on under the surface that really kind of bothers me or like icks me a bit. And you know, Timothy Chalamet, like I kind of want to, I want someone to shave his head. I want him to do something different moving forward.
Yeah, instead of just.
But if you look at his career currently, where he's at, he's the new Leo DiCaprio, right?
No,
that's how I see it. No. I think that he's starting with some really sort of groundbreaking roles. He's very into his craft. He's just kind of working out as he goes, and Hollywood's just molding him to be what he wants, right?
It's an interesting comparison.
I mean, what they want.
What they want,
not what
sorry.
He wants.
It's him, despite his, like, sort of matinee idol looks, going for roles that use them in a weird way. And I would argue that Wonka does that a little bit because he seems so sort of cuddly and approachable, and yet Wonka sort of allows him to be a sort of musical theatre kid that has a tiny, like, 5% edge to him, but it's always there. I don't know if you guys have seen Wonka.
Have you?
Yeah, I have.
You've seen it?
It's good. It's good. I liked Wonka. Like, he's really good in it. I don't think it's a
great movie. I saw the trailer and
I
wanted to die.
You and I talked about how if that movie's good, the person who made that trailer should be summarily executed. And I agree. I would sign that. Because
do you think Hugh Grant is good in it too?
I think Hugh Grant's pretty good. I think it's a generally pretty good movie. It's certainly not a like, oh my God, rush out and go see it. But I was like, yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that film. Well, that's a solid like 7.5.
Jesus Christ. All right, let's not delve into that.
Anyway, but yes, Timothy is doing things like in Call Me By Your Name where he's playing a very, just to give the briefest retrospective on him, right? You know, he's playing a very like intelligent and worldly kid, or a kid who's projecting himself as very worldly but yet has these vulnerabilities, you know, playing alongside Armie Hammer, who's a fucking allegedly very weird person but gives a very good performance in that movie. And
nothing weird about eating human flesh.
Yeah,
go on, continue.
Yeah, he eats some stuff in that movie, but the idea of Timothy Chalamet kind of playing this very erudite kid, but also one who's got these weird gangly sort of insecurities about him. And then I think he's spun that into some interesting directions like elsewhere. And with Dune, he's playing the reluctant hero, which can be a very boring role, can be a very frustrating role. The kid constantly going, oh, you know, it's Jon Snow in the last season of Game of Thrones. I don't want it. I don't want it. I've never wanted it. She's my queen, you know. I don't know who that is.
Jon Snow.
Liam Neeson?
Yeah.
How do you do a Jon Snow? Well, I've never been good at it.
Well, that was Scottish.
Yeah.
So what do you like about Chalamet in this?
I think he's playing this role with a very, very subtle anguish to it. And
that's what he always does, is subtle anguish.
I
shouldn't be mad because I like I love George Clooney, who does the same thing in everything.
Sure.
I just don't like his shtick.
I don't think he's doing that in Wonka. I think he's doing something much more vivacious that just has that tiny little like sort of razor blade underneath. I think in Little Women, he's wonderful playing like this kind of lovable but sort of carefree guy who ends up in over his head in love with this girl. In Lady Bird as well, like he's very good with Greta Gerwig as a Saoirse. But in this movie,
Saoirse Ronan.
Sure.
So sue me.
Go on.
But in this movie, there has been complaints that his characterization is flat and that it is not well marked out, like the trajectory of it, and it's not a particularly engaging watch. And I disagree. I think watching him, every person he has a conversation with throughout this film, whether it's Zendaya, who I think, against all odds, they have a very touching romance going on, because I think the movie, it's the part of the movie that kind of they have to yada yada it a bit and go, you get it, these guys are in love, we'll work it out later. And it does kind of work.
It kind of moves quickly and they kind of glance over it. But you
and
go, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I think it kind of works. Josh Brolin coming back from the first movie and their connection together. The way that him and his mother, Rebecca Ferguson, who I believe is approximately 7 minutes older than him, but anyway, his mother, is like the way that they are fracturing in this movie when they were all each other had in the first one. And now in this one, it's like, Mom, you're going a little crazy. And she's like, drink poison. And he's like, Jesus Christ, stop using that voice on me. Like,
yeah.
Those moments are insane. And every time he's called upon to give a rousing speech, motherfucker delivers it. Do you not think that scene where he's in with surrounded by the Fremen and they all, he's like, not one of you can stand against me. And they all pull out their daggers, at which point I would go, or maybe you can. Like, immediately I would give up. And he doubles down and sells them all in that moment. Mm. I think he's so good when he's
as
called.
As it was written.
As it was written.
When he's not
that's
being...
That's exactly how this son of Gleeb would piss himself, you know?
But that's when he's not being Mr. Quiet, Mr. Boring. Like, he does, but he doesn't have enough moments of that. Because all he ever does and all I've ever seen him do is just, I'm just sort of...
Oh, so it's the underplayed, sultry sort of delivery throughout, like the really consistent, like one note stuff that bothers
you. Yeah, it's his wispy voice.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think he's not good. I feel like you see glimpses of it. You see him do scenes like that, and you go, "Great, there's some liveliness, there's some level," but then it just reverts back to the same, and you go,
"I'll pull back to where Tom said that. I mean, he does have to play the neutral in a way."
He does.
He's the lead.
It's a tricky role.
It is tough.
Yeah.
Because, again, in a powerhouse cast here, you've got so much talent.
Huge.
And these small roles, big actors, they're all in there just like delivering. Yeah. You know, you need someone to be.
Oh, sorry, it's part one, but Jason Momoa. Consistent.
We will come back to that. Excuse me.
That's part one, so we can't.
I'm gonna change topic slightly here. I will say that I don't remember much about the first one. So I watched it. I didn't see it in cinema. Okay. Point one. Okay. Point two is it felt like a setup film from start to finish. It felt very much like, yeah, okay, I get it. So what's part two got for
us? Yeah, you're gonna want to watch the second one.
Yeah. Which,
after all this setup.
And I think, and this is a big call, this is one of the best sequels in the last 10 years.
I'd agree with that.
And that's like, it's sequels.
Well, that's because
tough.
That's because it's one book.
It is, and it's almost cheating because
it's one film.
It's one film.
We pressed pause for 3 years, and then they were just like, oh, unpause, and the movie kept going. And I don't have an issue with that. I get that people do, but I think it's such a well refined tone. Mm. And Villeneuve, like, carries it through. Greg Fraser, the cinematographer, Australian, who's almost certainly winning another Oscar for this because he won one for Dune.
Yeah.
You know, I just think the fucking, like...
The cinematography...
production design on this movie.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
This film has almost everything.
Yeah.
Almost everything.
Except for a good lead, but yeah. So close.
And that's tricky. I get that your viewing experience and your distaste for Chalamet would make this a very tricky part one and two.
I'm trying to think of
very tricky.
Timothy Chalamet, but I can't think of a bit. But it's a shame.
Timothy Chalamet, maybe not.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Nah. There's something.
Do you remember the scene between
Timothy shat the bed?
Between him and his dad in the first film where he says to his son, look, if you're not going to step up and be a leader, then you've done everything you need to do. Just be my son.
Just be my son. Oscar Isaac, killing it.
Yeah, beautiful scene.
Now, Oscar Isaac is one of my favourite actors in this current sort of field of actors.
He's one of my favourite human beings
alive.
He's
just... Ooh,
yeah. Really?
Yeah, there are people in this room I don't like as much as Oscar Isaac.
I don't think he can do any wrong.
What? Okay, what is happening?
I think he's fantastic. I love Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, he's great.
He's wonderful in that movie. I want to just say now, because otherwise I'll forget later, if I were saying my favourite performance from Dune Part 1, and I'm not kidding... it's Jason Momoa.
Why?
He's fucking incredible in that movie.
He's so bad.
It's the best performance he's ever given and probably ever will give. Okay, well, his name's Duncan Idaho, but that's fine.
He goes, hey, young Paul Atreides.
Like, oh, young Paul. Right, absolutely.
He's not saying, I'm Paul, hello.
Okay, you're going to make me do 20 seconds on Momoa.
There's
the scene where he talks about living amongst the Fremen and he's just like, they tracked me down and they tried to kill me and I have to tell you, I have never come so close to dying. And he sounds like he's rock hard as he says it. And it's like, who gets excited by that? But he loves it.
Yeah, but-
and there's one scene
yeah, let me
where the Harkonnen are attacking the Atreides and he like attacks a bunch of them and he comes out of nowhere and kills a few of them near a helicopter. And after killing two or three of them, he bangs at his chest, points at three of them and screams, and the three heavily armed dudes go, yeah, dude, whatever, what the fuck? And they just back away and he takes the helicopter. And I've never seen someone so embody brute force and yet tenderness the way he does in that
because
film.
He's such a Hawaiian bro.
And yet
so intimidating when he wants to be.
So intimidating. He's such a fucking friendly guy. He's such a good, warm presence in that film. Mm. I love him. I love all the performances across these movies. But Jason Momoa, rewatching Dune Part 1 last week, really stood out to me. I remember thinking, fuck, I loved this performance.
That is mind-blowing to me.
Is that your favorite performance over the two?
No, I think Austin Butler is the best performance. I'm really grateful to get to lock in on Austin Butler again because, oh, mama.
I want to quickly go back to as if Jason Momoa is the best. He does nothing. He does the same thing he's done in every film ever. Sorry, but you're wrong. Move on.
But
Austin Butler's also great.
Right,
and you're coming around because Austin.
Yeah, that's it. It's broke clock, right? Twice a day. Finally, they found the right movie for
it's
that.
That's not right.
I don't think it's
square
fits.
Doesn't peg, and they're just like, they're just knocking around
he's
the totally, shapes until
totally
they're like,
he's
oh,
different
the square
to everyone
goes
else.
Square.
I think that's true, but that's because he's a character called Duncan Idaho in a sci-fi movie. I think he's exactly that character.
The character's name is Paul.
Yeah, that's the funniest meme about this. It's like, this boy will be the Messiah. What
like,
name are you thinking?
Shima Lib. And they're like, but also Paul.
Paul.
Some of it's dumb.
Let's talk about Austin Butler.
Yeah, should have won the Oscar for Elvis. Might as well win it for this. Come on.
There's weirder nominations than this. He won't get it, but that would I wouldn't. If
this
it
is
got
one
to,
of the yeah, better sorry, characterized villains.
It's pretty
we've
ridiculous
also had in a while.
It's yeah. so well done. Mm. He's on screen for 16 minutes in a 2-hour 40-minute movie, and he is terrifying.
That pissed me off though.
That he's barely in it.
Yep.
I kind of loved it. I loved the. It's the even though it's less than Heath Ledger.
I needed a little bit.
It's the Heath Ledger effect of you want more of him, and that's the point. If there was just that little bit more, it wouldn't work as well.
I thought there was enough.
I think there's. He was. I agree with Marcus that I was like, fuck, more of Fade Rather would have been cool, and yet that's what I liked about it. That I'm like, God, that guy was so
I think
well deployed.
They didn't deploy Batista very well.
Ugh.
Yeah, he's.
He went to crumbling, bumbling doofus.
But I love
very quickly.
That's great.
Too quickly.
And they kind of signpost that a little in the first one. How his
a little bit
his introduction in the first one is just I yell and throw tantrums. And so the fact that he gets nothing done in this one is quite funny.
But again, I wanted to see his brother, his cousin. Brother. Cousin.
The cousins or
see,
brothers.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I wanted to see that transition. Just to have a tad more tension or like just a bit more give and take where Austin just walked in and just drop kicked him and that was pretty much it. He's like, I'm the captain now. And then...
Look at me.
But I sorry, back to Dave Bautista, it's like that's what he did in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like give him something a bit more interesting because he can do it.
I think he's much more pathetic in these movies than he is in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That didn't land for me. He didn't seem like he was meant to be pathetic and then he was pathetic and you're like, oh, how did that come about?
The scene where, oh, I, by the way, like sometimes play this game, which we've played previously on the pod, where we go, who would you play in the movies? And I was like, went and saw this with Kath at IMAX and as we're leaving, I'm like, there's no one that fits my body type or my look even a little, the closest is Timothée, and I don't look like Timothée, so I couldn't play
Timothée.
So I'm like, I couldn't do that. But then I was like, oh, I know who I'd play. I'd play one of those guys who goes, my lord, do you think you should get some and immediately gets like just curb stomped. Twice that happens. One guy says it to Batista, goes, you should really rest, my lord. And the second time it's someone talking to Austin Butler where they're like, my lord, you should really step. Yeah. It's like, you guys need to fucking learn. Just don't talk back to these guys.
He slits Harkonnen so many throats.
Oh, yeah. And he feeds them to his like little slave. Fuck.
His little what? Finish the sentence.
So he feeds them to his little slave girls.
Slaves. You just went.
Yeah, that could
finish
have been weird.
Finish sentence.
He's got these weird little like sort of harem of women. Mm. And it's just kind of like a, my girls are hungry. And like feeds them lungs and livers and stuff. And we just get that for a second. It reminds me of in the first one where there's like 10 seconds of this weird Harkonnen pet they have that has like seven limbs and is black. And you see it for a second and it's gone. And that's Denis Villeneuve being like, yeah, this is a weird fucking world. I could show you more if I wanted, but there you go.
3,000 or something like
that. Yeah, it's insane. I love these movies passionately. I think they're excellent.
So let's go back to Austin Butler doing his best Stellan Skarsgård impression.
Incredible.
Which, I don't know, like, I'll go back to Elvis. What a transformation. And literally was doing the press for Elvis and then gets the makeup test for this film. It's like, oh, probably not. Probably not a great idea. I'm just like I'm a leading man and a star and handsome, right? No. You're a white, painted, bald psychopath.
He's Lord Voldemort.
Yeah. But like a teenager. He looks so young and it's like, that's what makes it so disconcerting is he's so young and so violent.
I'm bringing this up because it genuinely fits, not to upset Frank, but there's a movie called Kill Bill. And in Kill Bill, there's a scene near the end where the bride, played by Uma Thurman, is about to fight against Lucy Liu, Oren Ishii, and do you remember Oren's, what is it, hench lady?
Yeah.
Go-Go.
Yep.
He's Go-Go. He's this, like, step that needs to be fought, and because he does so little and he's barely in it, it's scarier. Every scene you get with him, just that little bit of detail, you're like, who the fuck is this guy? This guy, he's kind of Boba Fett, a little bit as well. Or not, Boba's the original, isn't he? Or is Jango?
Bill Kill. I don't know. Look, Boba. That sounds compelling. I think we should talk about Bill that Kill? Film at some point.
Okay, Bill we Kill. Should get into it. It's a prequel to Blinky Bill.
Yeah, anyway, so back to Austin Butler.
Yeah, Austin Butler is really good. It's like almost a video game thing, setting him up as like, he's going to either be the final boss or the step before. I thought the way the movie was going to end, Timothy was going to have to fight him.
Oh my God, can you not say his
name? Just say Timothy.
Timothy? He's going to have to fight him in order to get through to the Baron. Or he's going to have to, and the fact that it kind of ends up just being the final battle.
Sure.
It's beautifully shot.
I thought Paul was going to die.
Me too.
And then be brought back to life or something. But I was like, yeah, he's got him.
I watched this in the cinema by myself. And during that knife fight, the final showdown between these two, which was silent as well. Yep. No music, no background noise.
That's very nicely done.
Very nicely done. Now, this was shot in
The Bourne Identity?
In a 2D sort of style as well, almost like a Mortal Kombat setup.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. Really, really cool. And I was clenching the entire time.
Your
my
jaw.
Butthole, yep. My jaw, my everything.
What else is there?
My toes!
I'd enjoyed the film up until this point, but that was the first time that I was like, man, I'm in this.
Mm. That was the first moment you go, oh, he's not the chosen one, but you're like, something bad could definitely happen.
And not knowing how this plays out, I was like, well, he could die, but he's not gonna.
He gets
so I was like, but how? It's more about how does he get out of this situation? Like, he's not
gonna
win. He shouldn't be the better fighter.
No. Timothée Chalamet is the scrawniest, lamest little dude.
They kind of explain this.
I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care. Okay. He looks unco. Sorry.
No. I don't disagree.
You know what I mean?
Frank,
he looks like he can't do anything.
I think it's more interesting.
Floppy.
I think rather than having a Chad sort
I don't
of-
think he should be a Chad. Austin Butler would be better. You know, Austin Butler at least has like coordination.
Austin Butler's better at playing a scary alien.
Yeah, no.
As he nails in this,
well,
right?
He could do like a twin situation. He could just do- Jeremy Irons.
The fact that they have so little dialogue between them and every line counts when he says, it's nice to finally meet you, cousin. Cousin, is that right? You know, the way when he first does the Stellan Skarsgård voice and it's not on Austin Butler's face. So you're like, oh, the Baron's in the room. And then it goes to his face and you hear it and you're like, that's like fucking ventriloquism. I don't actually understand how he's doing that.
He must have the best vocal coach in Hollywood.
His vocal performance in this film astounds me. I am so glad. Again, I know I said it like 20 minutes ago. I'm fully back on the Austin Butler train. I thought Elvis was a train wreck and I could barely even acknowledge his performance in it. I think he's just astounding in this film with what time he's given. It was really, really excellent. The fight, we haven't even talked about the fucking fight in the arena between him and the other three Atreides. An incredible set piece.
The set piece is incredible. Firstly, made more impressive by the fact that it goes just plain black and white.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to explain itself.
No, they're just kind of like, this is what this society is into. Looks like a bummer. And then their fireworks are just kind of like
blood
squids
pops.
Exploding, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
It's the most upsetting display of like, it's New Year, kids. Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
And,
what's
and
happening?
Then they've got these
gothic joy. Yeah. Doesn't make sense. Yeah,
these creatures in the arena, which are like succubus looking.
They're just people in hats.
Is that at all it is?
But it's kind of
when they first came out, they, I was like, oh God. it's an alien. And I thought he was going to fight them. That's what I thought.
They look like they're dressed like devils. Like there's some sort of... You're right, I think. They
it's
are
definitely just now, humans.
It's almost like a Pan's Labyrinth-esque.
It is. It has a Del Toro thing to it. Yeah. I have my laptop background right now. My wallpaper is Austin Butler when he's fighting the Atreides who hasn't been drugged. Mm. So just quick for the listener. It's a scene where Austin Butler, it's his birthday. He's coming of age as the Nar Baron, to the heir to Baron Harkonnen, Stellan Skarsgård. And he's going to fight three drugged Atreides warriors in order to show his skill, but one of them hasn't been drugged. Mm. And so he's fighting him. He takes off his shield to fight him. And as he's fighting this last warrior, one of these weird, like, demon creatures comes and whips the Atreides in the back. And fucking Austin Butler, like...
loses his
back! And I just... Because
like, all he wants is to kill him.
He just wants to murder. Close-up of him screaming.
That's a pride thing.
Oh. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get everything. You get everything about that character. Leave Frank alone. This has been a hard time.
He felt emasculated in that moment, Frank. Don't discredit his feelings in that moment.
Tom did. Yeah.
My bad. No, everything you need to know about that character is so well covered in that scene. It's brilliant. And then we've got Lea Seydoux in it for like 10 seconds as the Bene Gesserit who seduces him.
Yeah.
Great misdirect. That whole scene where you're like, oh, so they're going to fuck. And then when he kneels down and she puts the needle to his neck, I was like, oh my God, that's so good. Like,
no, but sorry, the next scene is she's pregnant.
They did fuck, but I'm like, the whole scene, an idiot that I am, I watched Dune Part 1 the day before and I'm just like, oh, it's Lea Seydoux. If you want to cast sex in your movie, you cast her, right?
She's really?
100%. Like that's...
50%.
Okay. I think Lea Seydoux is like one of the sexiest people working.
She's a beautiful woman.
Marcus
yes,
left the chat.
And she so often is cast as a very like sexual energy sort of thing, or like she's very often cast to be like the female form exemplified, like very much. So seeing her in this, I was like, how is she going to get naked? Because these movies are pretty sexless. And then even when you see her shoulders, you're like, for these movies, that's kind of risque. And then when she's leading him into the room, I'm like, okay, I guess they're going to do it. And I totally, not until she brought out the box, did I go, oh, fuck, of course, that's what's happening. I loved that scene. I thought it was great. I think everything to do with the Bene Gesserit, it's really good. Christopher Walken on set for 2 hours, but like, great. He is really good as the Emperor. A lot of fun.
Oh,
We did miss one thing too. We're talking about Austin Butler and how they've decked him out. I mean, impressive. Did he shave his head to this?
Ball cap.
Man, the like
looks great.
The makeup team, the costuming, the set design, everything here is phenomenal.
His
right,
jaw,
but the inside of his mouth,
the black,
completely blacked out.
Mm. Yeah.
It looks disgusting.
Incredible. It's very upsetting.
And it's so effective. Like, so effective. And I kept looking at it. And I'm like, God, like I want an explanation almost, but I don't need it.
It's cool. So good. We truly might have spent half of this talking about Butler, but I don't care because he's phenomenal in this film.
Yeah, he needs to be credited
and
for the work.
One of my favorite moments that I already kind of started on between him and Paul is when they're fighting and Paul looks over at Zendaya and Austin Butler, Fayed Rautha, notices and goes like, is this the pet? And looks at her. And you think, oh, he's going to say something gross. He's going to, like, smell her. He's going to reference, like, you know, eating her or fucking her or whatever. And he just turns back. And I didn't fully get the line, but I think he just says, like, any special attention for the pet? Like, he says something like that or any special...
No, I think that's right. And I think...
And it's a moment where Paul just kind of goes, what the fuck did you just say? Like, it's not even a... It's such a weird line because it kind of... Like
no, well, I think he's talking about when he obviously takes
what
over.
Attention should I give her?
Yeah,
but again, it's like it's not. She'll make for a nice trophy, you know, or like she'll. It's such a weird way of saying that sort of line.
It's almost like respectful because I'll kill you.
And then what should I do?
Yeah,
I remember that line and just going like, I've never heard that line before in a scene. I've seen this scene 1,000 times where two people are boxing or fighting. I watched Starship Troopers again for the millionth time the other day. And it's when like Johnny Rico and Xander are watching what's her name? Fucking
Carmen.
Carmen is in the crowd and he's just kind of like, don't get any ideas about my girlfriend.
Yeah.
All's fair in love and war. You know, greatest movie of all time. But in this, it's just kind of like, it's a very hyper-specific, weird moment. And it really, you see that look on Timothy Chalamet's face where instead of being grossed out, or he's like, what did you just say to me? Like, it's
taken aback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And then they fight, and then he stabs Paul, and then Paul lets him stab him again so he can get the other knife out and stab him. And he says, "You fought well, Atreides," and dies. And it's so good. And Austin Butler.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. Yeah, the fight's good. Austin Butler's good.
But you don't like the movie.
Well, that's not the whole movie, is it?
No, I suppose we have acted like Austin Butler is the main character of this film, and there's a lot of other stuff going
on. No, there is. We didn't get to see a lot from Florence Pugh. I think they might be gearing her up for...
She'll do more in the next.
More in the third
Same
part.
With Anya, yeah. Anya Taylor-Joy.
Something I didn't Five know seconds. Was going to happen, which oh, really? Was a pretty good reveal, yeah. Duke Messiah is the sequel to... Dune Messiah is the sequel to the book, and there Denis Villeneuve said he will adapt that if this movie does well enough, and that will be the final of the trilogy. I believe this movie, based on the weekend it's just had, yeah. is going to do well enough. There will be a final film in the Villeneuve. But they're also making a TV show because now it needs to be IP. So enjoy Dune while it lasts, because we're all going to hate it in 10 years.
I have a question or I guess your thoughts on this, but if they are going to introduce Anya Taylor, right?
Yes.
As the sister, does that mean that we're done with Timothy at this point?
No, I don't think so. Wouldn't that be nice? I think...
Unless they age him, how... I don't know how this is going to work logistically.
Without knowing anything about Messiah, I think it's a book about the way in which he can't quite square the circle and try and find a way to actually... lead the Fremen to victory. Because the weird thing is...
Yeah, but you see my point. She's obviously gearing up to be in the third part,
so
right?
Whether or not there's going to be some flash forwards, kind of because this movie so often does those moments where it shows, like, his visions and whether he has these, like, telekinetic, like, across the temporal fold sure. conversations with his sister.
Sure.
I mean, Rebecca Ferguson's constantly talking to the fetus, yeah. having those conversations. Rebecca Ferguson, fantastic in this movie,
the fetus,
by the way.
Not great.
Oh, yeah, the fetus acting is all right.
Could have been better. The plot of Dune Messiah is 12 years
old. I don't want to know.
Actually?
No, I truly don't want to know.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
You can post it on our socials. I don't. It's a spoiler. I don't want to know what happened.
I mean, I kind of, after seeing this, I kind of don't want to know either.
Yeah. Sorry, Frank.
I'm going to be honest.
Forget I offered. Don't worry about it.
Look, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Sorry.
Everyone's having a good time.
We're having a wonderful time. Hand talking about throat. This movie that we love. Don't use the voice on us, Frank. Frank's version of the Better Guesser was, come on, guys!
So, look, this had action, this had romance, this had it had sci-fi, it had uh-huh. it had just had, again, it ticked all the boxes.
Sci-fi. It is
it does sci-fi. Allude to an off-screen sex scene. It does kind of have a post, we banged, but...
We've just finished yeah. fucking, and yeah. it's like,
language.
Oh, okay. Like, that was, that. Like I just said about this being a fairly sexless series.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a shock. The close-up of them breathing heavily, I was like, this is steamier than I expected this movie to go. That even to suggest yeah. that they have, because every time it shows them waking up together, they're fully clothed. You know, every time it shows, you know, they kiss, you know, but there's no real, you know, suggestion that this is a movie that has... sex in it, even though they mention Fade Rotha and him being sexually vulnerable and stuff like that.
You know,
it does feel like a movie that
I guess they spend so long not showing too much affection or being very close. You do get the odd kiss here or there,
yeah.
but it's very rare. And then I think they're almost like, oh, just for our audience to let you know, they actually are in love and here's a quick scene to show you that they are intimate.
Did it work for you, their relationship? It worked for me. But it wasn't almost until the last 20 or 30 minutes. I was thinking, I'm really enjoying this. Don't know if Timothy and Zendaya are selling me. And
I think Zendaya was pretty good.
She's really good.
She's excellent.
She believes
she's selling it. He, to me, wasn't.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the thing. Like, he's trying to underplay it because now at the very end, he's trying. Wait, spoilers? We're doing this? Doesn't matter.
Of course.
Yeah,
no,
of course. At the very end, he's like, I'm arranging a marriage.
Yeah.
You know, I'm marrying. It's a power play. Here's what I'm doing. You don't exist. Maybe, I don't know.
So Paul Atreides is the result of, and it, like he's the Atreides bloodline because of his father Leto, Oscar Isaac. And then he's also a son of a follower of the Bene Gesserit, right, who are like the psychic, mystical, powerful, almost like spiritual beings who control things from the shadows, right? So already that combination of like an Atreides bloodline and also trained in the Bene Gesserit arts of like the voice and all that. He also, it turns out, is a Harkonnen, because it turns out Baron Harkonnen is his grandfather, and also the Fremen accept him and think of him as Lisan al Gaib or Muad'Dib, right?
Yeah, he's the pole of all trades.
So he's everything. Yeah, 100%. He is everything unionized. And so to everyone, he represents some utility. To his mother, to the Atreides, you know, to even to the Emperor, he's kind of like a bargaining chip, or if there's some way to influence him, to the Fremen, everyone, he represents something. And Zendaya is the only one who's like, I just fucking love you, dude. Like, I just like you. And if you stay who you are, I will love you. And he's like, cool, I got to go drink this poison that my mum's real insistent about. Hope that doesn't change me. And then fully fucks his brain. And he basically just realizes, like, I can't be with her anymore because of who I am and what I've become. And the way he says to her right before he goes and basically, like, pledges himself to Florence Pugh. Till the, you know, the end of my life, with every breath in my body, I will love you, which I find really, really devastating. I found that moment devastating. I found everyone bowing to him after he beats Fyodratha and her Zendaya walking out. And I can't believe that the final shot in a movie that's so about spectacle and grandness, about these huge worms and these, you know, distant planets and all this extravagant shit, one of the most affecting shots is the final shot of just the slow zoom on her and as she's waiting to ride the worm. Sorry, I just said ride the worm and I made myself chuckle. As she's waiting.
I ruined it.
I was like,
is he about to cry?
No, I said ride the worm and then was like, tee hee. As she's waiting to jump on the sandbar and it's the zoom and just as the shot's about to cut, you just see her chin wobble a little. And I was like, oh my God, that's an incredible shot. What a beautiful way to end the movie. Like 10.3 out of 11. Great movie. Loved it.
It was an epic film.
You got to tell us what you don't like about this more than just Timothée. Because he's not even really the... He is the main, but there's so much else going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you know what I feel is going on here? And Tom, you can probably confirm or deny this, but I feel like they've given the director so much free rein to just create.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that this doesn't have a lot of producers and EPs and people getting involved and too many fingers in the pie. I think they're like, all right, bro, you've got a vision. We're going to let you do it.
Well, it's, I mean, Denis Villeneuve has earned that respect and that.
Yeah, and rightly so. Yeah, right. Like, and proving a point, I think.
He took the impossible sequel and he made it work with Blade Runner. Right, you know, he took Blade Runner 2049, a movie that was 33, 34 years after the original.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yeah, well, that's going to suck. Like, that's going to be absolute asshole. And
it
for
was
my money,
pretty great.
I actually think it's better than the original. I love that film.
Yeah, the original
incredible.
Sucks.
I find the original a tad overrated despite its influence. But
it's a cult film.
Which cut have you seen? Who cares?
Butthole cut. Yeah, that one. But yeah, Denis Villeneuve proved something with Dune, an unadaptable book, as people have talked about for decades.
The fact that David Lynch couldn't do it, and like he's very well respected.
And David Lynch is suited to that genre now because it's like psychedelic sci-fi so much more now. Even then, it was his second movie. And now if you think, well, yeah, David Lynch is kind of perfect for this, but at the time, it was too much studio interference, to your point, Marcus.
Yep.
And even though this is Warner Brothers, they do seem to have, to some extent, given him carte blanche and go on, well, this worked. You gave us, like, the big movie out of the pandemic era that people actually went to see, even though it was on streaming. It still got people to the cinemas. So, you know, do what you're going to do, man. And he seems to have done it. Have you guys seen the controversy? He's the new Scorsese in that he does interviews and people are like, what? Like, people get really upset at the shit he says in interviews.
Oh.
He just did one the other day and he's like, I do not care for dialogue. I think that images are good, but when people talk, not so much. I do not like it. And everyone's like, oh, so he doesn't even like scripts. And it's like, I don't think that's what he's saying. No, it's like, I think he's
that's
like,
kind of great.
It's, to me, it's like, I mean, I don't know if this is a reference that's going to flow for you guys too well, but like Travis Scott, who's like a big hip hop artist at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if Travis Scott is like, yeah, lyrics or whatever, I kind of make beats. And people are like, oh, so lyrics don't matter to you? No, I just think like he's kind of more in the soundscape sort of thing. Like, obviously, Denis is very much about the visual. That's very clear from this. I don't think he's saying scripts are dog shit and they don't matter. I just think he's saying he kind of has a hierarchy and the images are what's the most important. And he lets the rest of it come.
Well, film is a visual medium. Like most,
it is a visual medium.
People know that, but yes, you just don't really say it. They don't say it, but you know what I mean? Like,
yes. I think the post-apocalyptic sci-fi realm is making a very quick comeback.
Like, would you say post-apocalyptic?
In a way, like more like barren wastelands or distant planets or like just vastness.
There's a dystopian
film.
Thing.
Yeah,
Especially the Harkonnen planet, which reminded me a lot of Dark City. Do you guys remember that movie from the 90s? It's just around the time The Matrix came out. It was like 98.
Dark City. Is that Liam Neeson?
No.
Oh, that's...
I think it's Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of Dark Man or something.
Anyway. Oh, yeah, Dark Man.
Is that it?
That movie fucking rocks. Yeah. That's a different movie. Can we just talk about Dark Man?
No. Sorry.
But Dark City was a big movie in the 90s, and it has that real, like, pale sort of like characters, all shaved heads, but also the weird gothic like darkness to it that the Harkonnen planet has.
I would like to see Dennis direct a Mad Max.
Dennis the Menace?
I'm saying Dennis because there's no way I'm gonna land that.
It's
last
just
name.
Denis.
No, it's Dennis. So
cool.
Dennis could do a really good Mad Max take.
Right. Yeah, but I don't want anyone but George Miller doing it while George Miller's still alive. I mean, that new one is coming out.
That's right.
That is going to...
It's been taken. I'm saying that if Miller hadn't got his hands on it, he would have been the next person.
I'm penciling that in, by the way. We're doing that in May, the new Mad Max.
We may.
Oh, pencil the gosh darn out of it. Language.
Frank, you've been quiet.
Yeah, I don't have much to say.
No, it's been great. Marcus?
Well, it's so nice.
The film.
No, I know. What could you have to say about a movie you haven't
it's
seen?
It's so nice to have Tom speak for a second. Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
It's good.
I don't know. I just walked out of this movie and went, that was sick. I love going to the cinema. That was everything I wanted.
I have
3 hours. I said this to you on the phone. 3 hours did not feel like 3 hours. And that's rare.
It's only 2:46.
Come on.
Just now you come on.
Give a little.
I have booked in 2 more tickets to see it in IMAX again in a couple of weeks with my mother. I'm very excited.
You
to watch
also
it
have a sickness.
I have a sickness.
Just
I'm unwell.
Just let it settle, man. No.
I want to see it again. I think it's fabulous. I don't think there's a lot we kind of did touch on a lot. I guess the thing is, it is strangely for its length. People have said that this movie blows through a lot of plot. And I get that on the level of like how it brings the different factions together. But the stuff with Timothée and the Fremen, it really is just like, now let's watch the Fremen.
He's doing it to annoy us now.
What am I doing?
Timothée?
The stuff with Chalamet and the Fremen is them just attacking the spice hoarders or the spice machines, you know?
Yeah.
And just that stuff for a while. And it's all phenomenal. Like the scene where they first go at one of the big spice... I can't have a word for that. Harvester, thank you. Jesus Christ. One of the big spice harvesters. That scene with him and Zendaya is so fucking good.
I'll tell you what, if I'm going to criticize it, I kind of wanted more action scenes.
Yeah. I think there's...
There was some really cool moments where you have the soldiers on top of the a mountain.
Oh, the very start.
At the very start, and they're just getting sniped in the head, and it's all very, very quiet again. Like, the use of silence in this film was done very well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it creates tension so well, as we know.
Yeah.
And just watching people just getting picked off one by one by these like bizarre sort of sniper guns. And there's not a lot of guns in this film either.
Yeah.
Everything's very quiet. And I think that's the point because on this planet especially, like silence is sort of crucial because these worms are just devastating, right?
Yeah.
So the snipers they're using are very quiet. The machine guns that they've got on the side of the choppers... also very quiet. They sound like nail guns.
Yeah, just to like vroom, vroom, sort of when they fire.
Yeah, and that's very cool.
Well, isn't that because it doesn't want to be rhythmic?
There could be something.
Like, maybe.
And if it's
and they're always like, don't turn your shields on. Like even when the Harkonnen are on top of that mountain, like you said, they're like no shields because that attracts the worm. Which I think is such a funny detail. I think they mention it in the first Dune. They're like doing the harvest and they're like, why don't they just use shields? And someone's like, and attract the worms? That's canon. And it's like, all right. It's just a random detail. It's like, can't use shields, I guess. You know, it's like a 12-year-old making up a game where you're like, I'll just use my shield. And they go, no, you can't use your shields because... And it's like, all right, cool. Yeah. But I do love that. The scene that you're talking about, Marcus, where when they're getting shot and Timothy and his mother, Rebecca Ferguson, are underneath and as the Harkonnen are getting shot and they just... fall quietly and just boom, hit the ground. Oh, it's so there's even that shot looking up where it looks like the body isn't even moving, and then it suddenly just lands right there. That's a great scene. I don't know, the attack when they finally do it on the Emperor and the Harkonnen and everything right at the end where they finally like bombard them and
really they all come in on there.
But when they all come in on the worms, when it's just the close up of the storm and suddenly the worms just burst through, I levitated out of my seat.
They were gearing up for that shot. And that's used in promotions as well, right?
Everyone's seen that shot of the
The three worms.
It's so good.
But again, how do they dismount? I just need to know. I just need to see it once.
Just once.
I don't disagree.
Getting on it is far fetched, even for sci-fi.
Yeah.
Right? The tiny little grappling hooks that they're clipping on to, like, frills on the worm is, like, that's enough to turn frills? And control. And do you know what I mean? Like little...
Yeah, they almost have, like, their...
Scales.
Scale?
Shelf.
The shelf of the worm.
Yeah, it's not a snake.
I have to admit, when we first saw that close-up of one of the hooks pulling back, I was like, oh, no, that's not what you want. And then I realized that is what you want.
It was intentional,
and I was sad. Like that's how you you run the worm. You just pull back on its skin and make it do what you want.
Of course, you have to go.
Yes, of course. That's how they slow it down, but that scene is...
And then they go... Get it down. Just to calm it down. And then they step off quietly because that's how you dismount.
Do you think it's literally like...
throw it an apple.
Yeah. It stops. Give it the
apple. Are they all standing in a worm shape and then the worm comes up from underneath them and they're like, ready to surf? And boom, worm.
Who came up with the technique?
I mean,
who decided that?
Jason Momoa, I think.
They're like, get to the highest peak of a dune, right? Make sure
highest peak of the movie.
And make sure that the worm is running through the dune.
Yeah. Go sideways, go west, and you want to face east.
And then run along sand, which I don't know if you've tried.
It's hard.
Let me just say.
But when you finally dune it, it really hits.
Chalamet's stunt double, that scene, that guy is moving.
Running.
On the sand. Oh, that's Chalamet.
That's some running you like.
Chalamet.
It is some running I like.
It's Tom Cruise.
On-screen running.
Yeah, you like on-screen running, but it's good.
I do. I'm very picky about my on-screen running. And that's all I liked about this movie.
That's fair.
It's not fair.
I can't imagine what would have detracted from this movie for you, Frank. So, I mean...
It might have been the 3/4-inch viewing. Maybe I'll go to IMAX.
What have you learned from this experience?
I
don't know what else to tell you, pal.
You haven't told me anything. You've never given me any advice in my life.
What did you think of the music?
Boring. I hated that stupid guitar.
Do you know, we're going to call this a Starship Trooper. He's doing a Starship Trooper right now.
Right, where he's just deciding
he's
that...
He's checked out.
No.
Everyone else is enjoying themselves too much.
Narcissistic. Awful.
So we're throwing in the power?
No, go on. What do you want to do? Right?
Go on.
I can see it in your eyes.
I don't want to throw it.
Do you know what?
I don't want to do it.
Do you know what?
What?
I'm going to sit.
What a surprise.
I'll also sit on 10.3. I think this is an exceptional film.
I think go out and see it.
Yeah, go see Dune 2. Fucking
yeah, like it need, like they need encouraging. It's like very highly rated.
Yeah.
It's doing very well.
Everyone's doing very well.
That's right.
I think that's what's exhausted me. That was a real stupid pun.
That was a real solid episode for you, Frank.
I don't think I spoke for like 40 minutes.
No.
I had a nap.
We could tell.
All right.
It's fine.
I'm glad you guys had a good time.
What are we doing now?
I'm not doing much. What about Dune? Dune in the pal.
Thanks for listening to Throw in the Power. My name is Frank.
I'm Dune.
And I'm Toon.
That was our episode on Dune Part 2. Thanks for coming.
Good app, good film.
Drop
great.
Us an email. Oh, hey, pals at gmail.
Please do.
Com.
I'm having
keep listening.
Pizza.
We've got a whole season ahead of us. Throw in the power.